Hello, this is CrossLink Radio, where we talk about health from the eye teeth on down. I'm here to help you understand some of the mysteries of health from the perspective of the oral health care provider. That's me, Shirley Gutkowski. I'm a clinical dental hygienist. I'm in the prevention mode, helping you keep your health at its optimum while bringing you a wide variety of guests with the information that you want to know. And here today, we're going to be talking a little bit about sugar and its effects on the entire body. I have a guest here today, Dr. Phyllis Canyon, who is a certified nutritional consultant and a diplomate of the College of Clinical Nutrition and a fellow of the American Association of Integrated Medicine. So we've got a pretty fancy guest here today to talk to us about sugar and its effects on the body. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. So we're going to talk, as we said, about sugar and pH and how it affects the entire body. Now, for dentistry, we always talk about sugar's bad for your teeth because it kind of melts the teeth. And I just had kind of a conversation with somebody just the other day about sugar does not melt teeth. If you took a tooth out and put it in a bowl of sugar, nothing would happen to the tooth. It's the bacteria that use the sugar as a food to melt the teeth. So is that how it works in the body too, or does it actually create a low pH environment in the body?
Well, sugar definitely has an effect on the low pH in the system. And one of the big problems that we see with sugar in the diet now, of course, is from soda, which has a direct impact on the teeth. Approximately about 36% of all sources of added sugar in our diet actually are in sodas, according to the National Cancer Institute. There are three things that I always recommend to my cancer patients that they avoid. One is caffeine, number two is sugar, and number three is milk. Because of the damage that we know that they do to our teeth. And a lot of the dentists that I work with will always call me and say, gosh, you know, we've got all these patients that we're seeing, these young kids with bad teeth. What do you think it is? And the two things that I always mention to them first, one, ask this patient, a dental patient, if they are doing chewable vitamins and if they drink milk, because those are the two things that I think that they should definitely avoid because of the impact that they have on the teeth. Chewable vitamins have a lot of ascorbic acid, and that has a tendency to eat on the enamel. And so many vitamins that are not the right quality, of course, then will have a direct effect on the teeth.
Talking about you had recommended getting off of chewable vitamins because of the ascorbic acid.
Yes.
But you also said to get off of milk. And I'm so excited to learn about why.
Milk, it has such a direct effect on our stomach. And if we're trying to keep our pH balanced, milk is just one of the things that we have to get off. One of the best books that you will ever read, written by a medical doctor, that I can't recall his name right now, is called, entitled Milk, the Deadly Poison. And that is a phenomenal book. I read that book when I was doing my master's degree. And it's once you read that, and we've recommended it to so many of the patients that I visit with that have kids that have a lot of upper respiratory issues. We saw that improving for kids that have allergies, for the kids that have, you know, runny nose, constipation. There's just so many things, and a lot of it has just been in all the processing, just like with the sugar. Sugar has changed dramatically over the last 60 years in how we process it. And unfortunately, the body, you know, struggles trying to digest it and process it, and now we use so many chemicals in that process that we didn't used to use before, so...
I'm writing things down. That's why the pauses are happening.
Yep, that's okay.
Okay, so the milk, so really with respect to the milk, it's not so much about the milk sugar as it is to the entire systemic load that the milk puts on the body.
And again, a lot of it is, you know, that the sugar that it gets converted into it. You know, our fruit is sweeter than it's ever been. And that's just a problem. We just consume too much sugar now. That's just all there is to it. Fruit is designed to be sweeter, and, you know, we consume way more, and that is a cancer feeder, and we know that for a fact.
Right. I agree with that 100% as well. What has happened is in our efforts in medicine, I think, we have gotten down to a smaller and smaller and smaller piece of the human body. Each discipline even has split off into different disciplines. I just think of, you know, I'm the expert in the left side of the right kidney. So so that has also happened in the food industry. We've kind of picked everything apart, and a person can have a 16-ounce glass of orange juice, but they would never, ever eat 16 oranges in a day or in a minute spot. So
yeah.
that's part of the whole issue here. So all right, so here we are. So now we're eating. Are you suggesting that all sugars are bad, or just table sugar, or fructose, or where are you at? Because we have a lot of different sugars anymore.
The one sugar that we recommend the best and have such a calling for. I own two organic stores in Texas. And the dentists are always sending their patients over to us because we carry xylitol. But the xylitol that we carry is made from 100% North American hardwood birch and is organic. Because one note of caution is that there is some xylitol that is made from corn. And because a large percentage of our corn crop in the United States is genetically modified, we recommend that be very careful in reading the labels to be sure you get the proper xylitol.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so xylitol
is great. It because it's a cup for cup, you know, pound for pound type of serving with it. So we like that. Whereas, you know, we have to be careful of some of the artificial sweeteners, because then the body thinks it's tricked and is dumping insulin at the wrong time because he thinks it's taking sugar in, and it really, in fact, is not. It's an artificial sweetener. And the body is very quick to...
The artificial sweeteners can also stimulate insulin production. Is that what you just said? Because I don't think that's very
correct.
Clear either.
Yeah. Right. That is very,
sugars like xylitol and erythritol do not promote insulin expression.
That's correct. Yes. Mm-hmm. And you'll have to look, because quite often they also advertise that they have a lower glycemic index, and that's the rate the body actually converts that to sugar.
Right. So explain that just a little bit more, because the glycemic index seems to be very intuitive until you really look at it, and then you're like, oh, wait a minute. So I like to classify sugars as fast and slow. So the sugar in a carrot is slow, and the sugar in a potato is a little faster, and the sugar that you sprinkle on your oatmeal is really fast. So
that's correct. And what you want is the slower the rate. In other words, if you took in a teaspoon of sugar, the glycemic index, the rate your body is going to convert that into glycogen is very, very fast. That would have a rating as about maybe a 2 or 3. Yet you could take an equal serving of peanuts, and that glycemic index is going to be more in the 50 to 60 range. A watermelon is going to be in the 100 range. A white potato will be in the 90 to 100 range. So peanuts or anything less than that has a glycemic index less than 50, I feel like it's healthier for the system because it takes longer for the body to actually convert it.
And the body's busy then converting it, and it's not just like short circuiting.
That's
correct. So you're
burning
calories while you're converting it, right? And then you're not getting the insulin, which is a fat storage hormone.
Right. And that's why we see so many individuals that have what we call, you know, the muffin top, which is around their waist where it's just kind of falling over on their belt line, you know, because, again, that's where the body just has a tendency to store the fat. So, and,
regarding the muffin top. Now, I've been wondering about this for quite some time. People will go to drastic measures to reduce their weight, and the stomach weight that you're just referring to seems to have the longest list of detrimental effects on the body. Why aren't medical doctors higher and faster on doing liposuction to remove that fat.
And for me, I mean, you can do that procedure, but the whole idea is that you get your body balanced so that you don't crave the extra sugar. And then if you eat properly and or nutritionally balanced, then your body will be able to handle that and burn it off. I'm not sure a thermogenic burner is going to work because, again, unless the body is balanced, you still crave that. We see that with so many gastric bypass patients that I see is, you know, they still have the sugar craving. And that is what, after they've had the surgery and they come to me, what we try to do then is to really balance the system to get them out of that craving. Because that seems to be their number one complaint to me is, gosh, I thought it was going to help with that in a year out or 2 years out. Now I've gained 30 pounds back, and I still have that sugar craving. And it's like because your body is still out of balance. Chromium is important for the pancreas, and in so many of these that I see, they have a very severe chromium deficiency. And I think because our diet is... Yes, chromium is really critical. And our diet is just so bad. I mean, in my office, I have a shelf of nothing but all of the bad stuff. And it's loaded. And everybody comes in and they're like, oh, my gosh, all of this stuff is bad? Yes, because if you think back at what we ate and how we cooked our food 100 years ago, that is what is so critical. 100 years ago, we didn't have a microwave. We didn't eat out of plastic. We didn't eat or drink out of styrofoam. We didn't have Teflon.
Right.
We didn't have aluminum. What we did was we had cast iron. If we had milk, it came straight from the cow or was in a bottle. We ate butter instead of margarine. So, you know, we look at how the diet has changed in the last 100 years, and now everything is quick serve. Pop it in the microwave, open the bag, it's ready to go. And because of that, it has all been altered somewhat. And we have people call from time to time and ask if we carry anything in our organic stores that is sugar-free. And it's like, you don't want to buy anything that is sugar-free. Because if you look at the label, if it is sugar-free, more than likely it will have more salt, more sodium listed, or more fat content. So we try to make everybody aware.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, if it's fat-free, then it's going to have sugar added to it, or it's going to have more sodium added to it. So the whole idea behind it is that we keep our body totally balanced so we don't have any cravings. And that we can eat one little piece of a sweet and be satisfied with that instead of having to have two or three, and then we continuously go back. And we just see so many young children now, and their systems are just so out of balance. And the biggest thing is that they have the sugar craving.
So, and when you say sugar craving, we have to broaden that a little because it's not just your classical sugar flavor.
It's not our refined sugar.
Craving.
It's, yes.
No.
It's even the artificial sugars. Yes.
And the grains.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is disguised as a sugar, as a salt craving. So,
well, there are over 30.
Go ahead.
Right. There are over 32 different names for sugar. You know, when I was a kid growing up, we picked up a product, and if it had sugar in it, it said S-U-G-A-R, and that was it. Now, with over 30 names for sugar, including high fructose corn syrup, we see that listed so much on products. And even supplements have high fructose corn syrup added to them. And that's what we have to really be so careful of. It's just everything now has sugar in it. I just talked with a meat manufacturer last week, and he said we absolutely do not put any type of sugar in the sausage that they make. And it's like, well, that's why we like your product. Because we've gotten into doing that so much in our manufacturing process now.
And it doesn't only just taste better with sugar, but it has a physiological effect. And once your pH drops, we have a critical pH in dentistry is 5.5. Is there a critical pH that stimulates cancer cells in the body that we have to really kind of look for?
Well, in most of the cancer patients that I have seen in all of my years of practice and the oncologists that I work with, we always see them somewhere in that 5 to 6.0, and neutral, as we all know, is 7.0. And so my goal with cancer patients is we take them off of the sugar, we take them off of the caffeine and the milk, and try to get their pH at 7.0. And we have been extremely successful with this protocol.
Okay, so here's the other question. When you go to a traditional doctor, they're not going to do any kind of a pH test. And I've been hounding dentists and dentistry to be taking pH of saliva for almost 10 years now. They're just not doing it. So what do you do as a patient, and what do you do? How do you find somebody to do these tests for you?
Well, and I'm blessed because the physicians that I work with, they send the patients to me and they let me, and I test by saliva because it's a little bit more definitive whenever we have them. I have them spit in a paper cup because I don't believe in the plastic. We stick the strip in it, and then we measure the strip to the color chart.
Right.
One thing that we've looked at when we do pH in the blood, the range is quite long. And that's what we don't like, because the range may be from 5.0 to 8.5. And that's 7.0. I think it should be 6.5 to 7.5, that should be the normal range. But unfortunately, it isn't. So I like doing the saliva test because it's extremely definitive. And once we change the diet, we see the pH improve dramatically. And I always say an acid system is a disease magnet. And that's kind of my mantra, because we just see it all the time. I mean, sugar, you know, is very bad. It's acid forming.
So the sugar that you're ingesting is causing the saliva to also decrease in a pH. And that acidic saliva will promote biofilm formation on the teeth, acidophiles. And those bacteria will continue to proliferate and cause more and more problems, from cavities to periodontal disease. So, probably eventually to oral cancer. So here we are with this big circle that nobody's talking about. There, you know, that Fed Up movie was great, but it didn't give a lot of answers. I listened to a podcaster that talks about a ketogenic diet, which is, you know, no fruits and vegetables pretty much at all, and very high in protein. And doesn't that create a low pH environment in the body?
Well, and it can. And, you know, what happens is, you know, when the body fluids contain too much acid, of course, it becomes acidosis. And, you know, that we know that really affects the kidneys and the lungs. But unfortunately, it really affects everything in the system. So we have to be really, really careful that we don't get to that acidosis level, because the symptoms of that are insurmountable. I mean, they just get bigger. And, I mean, you know, there's so many things that we see come from that, because there can be what we call a diabetic acidosis, which is people that, you know, have very poorly managed diabetes. There can be lactic acidosis, which means when there's too much lactic acid in the system. So we've got to look at all of it, and that, again, that's what I try to do, is balance the body, and it's critical that we keep the pH balanced. I mean, for me, that is probably the number one thing that I focus on in my practice as a nutritionist. Every person that comes in to see me, it's one of the first things we do is we have them cup and we put the strip in it and to see what their pH is.
So that's not momentary pH. This is what we're taught in dental schools and dental hygiene programs, that the saliva pH will change pretty readily, quickly, with whatever you just ate. So in a healthy body, if you eat something acidic, the saliva will respond, because it's aiming towards homeostasis, to buffer that acid. So you're going to get a higher buffering capacity in that saliva, and you're also going to have a higher pH in that saliva as it attempts to dilute that acid. So how do you do a saliva test to make sure that you're getting kind of a good sampling of the systemic pH?
Well, and what we do is, especially like with the cancer patients, we have them spit. I usually give them a test paper and have them check it throughout the day, not just once a day or not just after a meal or before a meal or whatever. We just check it two or three times throughout the day to see if they're averaging 7.0. And that is always the visual carries a very big impact with the cancer patients, because if I do mine and they look at mine and then they do theirs and they look at theirs, they're like, oh my gosh, what a huge mm-hmm. difference between, you know, what theirs looks like and mine does. But yet after we change their diet around, within 2 to 3 weeks already, we can see that pH becoming a little bit more balanced. Then I'll send them to the clinic and we'll have their blood test done, and their pH has even increased and improved dramatically in their blood supply as well. So doing the little test strip is just a quick visual, and I'm fortunate that I work with some phenomenal physicians and they understand right. the importance of diet and nutrition. And so, yes, it's very blessed that I have that opportunity. And with the oncologist, like I said, it's quite often, I don't know what you're doing, but it's working. Keep doing it.
I'll take what I can get, right?
Yeah, exactly. we like that a lot.
So what are your main features then? So you test the saliva. Do you do other labs so that you know how to manipulate things so that you can get more balanced pH?
Yes, and one of the other things that I do that is very quick and simple, but I think it's critical to the system, is to be sure that we don't have candidiasis. And as everyone knows, I'm sure, candida is a bacteria that we have in our system, and we need to keep it in control. So what I do, a very quick and simple test to see if their candida level is normal, because candida is heavier than water as a yeast. So if they take this, what we recommend is they get a small clear glass, fill it half full of water, and spit in it. If that saliva sinks, strings, specks, or settles on the bottom, then we know that they have an overgrowth of candida. And that is a fabulous way of testing very, very quickly.
You have them spit in a cup, and
yep.
the announcer here at Blog Talk Radio is going over what you said. So they spit into a cup,
yep.
and then you look at the saliva, and then what do you see?
We just set it on my counter and look it into the glass from the side, and you can see where the saliva is on top of the water. And in probably 90% of the cases the patients that I see here, instantly, we see that starting to the cloud in speck, and it just will, within 5 or 10 minutes, it'll all be settled on the bottom, the saliva.
Wow.
That is a systemic case of candidiasis. That is an overgrowth of candida. And yes, and so one of the things we do is we look at their sugar intake, because generally, if their pH is acidic, and I do the test, the candida test, then that is also indicative of there being an overgrowth of candida.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Very, very...
super easy test to do in a dental office, too.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. It does. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just spit in it and you just sit there and...
Quite a bit of discussion about early childhood caries and candida infections. And candida and periodontal disease are also kind of brought up in discussions over and over. Not quite enough to make an impact, but I don't think that anybody is doing those kind of tests in their practice. And if it's really as simple as you said, there's just no reason not to do it.
It's just amazing. And, you know, of course, when we look at, you know, why you might have the overgrowth, you know, it's just mm-hmm. because you have a high carb diet and a high sugar diet, number one. Sometimes we see it from people that consume too much alcohol. But the symptoms of having overgrowth or candidiasis, you know, you can have skin and nail fungus, and you know, you're feeling tired all the time, and digestive issues, and vaginal infections, and allergies, and oh my gosh, the list just goes on and on and on. And that usually coincides with what they tell me are their symptoms. Yeah, very, very effective test to do. Very effective. And very
awesome.
Quick.
Well, this has been a really interesting discussion, and if we had more time, I would just keep right on going. But we're kind of out of time here today, and we should probably get you back to make some other kind of conversations, because this is really important information, and I don't think that a lot of people, or that enough people, understand how this works and how to find a practitioner that's going to give them a real answer as opposed to another pill. And that's
right.
That's the sad case of medicine in the year 2015 in the United States. Although we have more options, we have better educated patients now than ever before, and they're looking for these kind of answers because they know the traditional way isn't working very well. So
yeah,
thank
and
you
that's
so much, Dr. Kenyon.
Yeah, no problem. I'm happy to do it, and we'll be happy to come back on again.
Do you have a website where people can look you up a little bit or no?
Yep, oh, I do. The website is www.docphil.com.
Awesome. So it's docphil.com, docphil.com.
That's it. That's it.
You must have been irate when that other Dr. Phil got his website stuff going.
Well, everybody laughs because he's P-H-I-L. I said, that's the man version. The female is P-H-Y-L. That's me.
I'm the girl.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, there you go.
Thank you so much. Have a good rest of the week.
Great. Thanks. Bye. I look forward to hearing back from you.
I will. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to CrossLink Radio with host Shirley Gutkowski. If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio. To have Shirley be your personal oral health coach, you can reach out to her via email